in the middle of the hesped, the cell phone went off, which is also a ma'asim b'chol yom, but this one went off in the kever. In the kever it started ringing because one of the members of the kever kadisha, where they bent over to put the body in, the cell phone fell out right into the kever. And then a hand shoots out and says, "For you, Rabbi." So just if possible, to turn off all. Thank you. So it says Esav Zisha the Atzaidi Sada Yachad Ish Time Yosheva Holid. So it's an Ish Sada. An Ish Sada. Why he's called an Ish Sada? Okay, he's a Rashi says he's an Adam Botel. He's an Adam Botel. He's out. Not what we associate normally with a hunter. A guy's out hunting, bows and arrows, running, working up a sweat, shooting animals, shooting people, whatever he's doing. And Rashi says Adam Botel. He's an Adam Batel. That's what we think. What's an Adam Batel? It's a bench kvetcher sitting in yeshiva. I saw a battle on him in the city. That's what we think of as an Adam Batel. He's running around, exerting himself, physical energy. And he's called the Adam Batel. That's what Rashi says. Rashi says he's called the Adam Batel. So what's an Ish Sada? An Ish Sada means he's out living out in the fields. And a person who lives out in the fields means that there are no limitations. He's out in the field. There are no borders. There are no restrictions. He lives a life of complete freedom. Everything is possible. There are no limitations on him whatsoever. What's an ish tam yoshev v'holim? An oil, by definition, has four walls. A person sitting in an oil. You're sitting here in Olei Torah. You're sitting here with a base medrash with walls. And you're sitting in a base medrash. It's not the physical walls. It means a person who learns Torah learns a little bit of self-control. A person who learns Torah learns to restrict himself in our world today where there are so few restrictions. And a person sits in a base medrash and he learns. An ish tam, he is a person who has living. He's living with self-control. So the person who does it, we live in a world, it's an interesting phenomenon. Those of us who are, you know, Rav Weinbach also told me when he was in Torah Vadas, he said he had a lot of chaverim. He said those who were interested in money became businessmen. He says those who were interested in chess became lawyers. He says the ones interested in sports, they all became Rosh Hashivas. That's what they said. So, you know, you wonder, you know, we live in a world, you know, and what can I tell you? You know, where there is still that interest in sports for some reason. You know, I'm sure that you are, even if you deny it, that means that for sure you are. And those of us, I'll deny it too, which means for sure I am. And it's something that gets in the blood, and it stays in the blood, stays in the system. What is a Mishagas sports? A bunch of guys, all who have more money than all of us put together, all who are going to lose more money than all of us put together, all who are going to end up in more jail time than all of us put together. And yeah, we're crazy, Meshuggah, these guys running around in their shorts and, you know, and making money, and we're watching them, and it gets in the kishkes. So I heard from Meshebra Nosen Vachtvogel Zatzal. He said, what is the Mishagas of sports? What is this excitement, this action? What's it all about? So he said, man is born to compete. Man is born to compete. We're born to compete. We're meant to be competing with the Yetzer Hara. That's our tachlis in life. Meant to compete with the Yetzer Hara. If a person mischannels it badly, so they go to war. They start killing people. That's part of the competition. It's mischanneled competitive nature of man. If a person downgrades it a little bit, so he watches other people smacking each other up on a field, that's his outlet. That's that competition. That's where it's coming from. That's what Rav Nosson Vachtvogel said. A person who channels it properly realizes that we have a competition ourselves. Our competition is that we have to compete with the Yetzer Hara. The Yetzer Hara is there from the time we're born, and our competition is that we have to go and compete with the Yetzer Hara. So, I heard once about a woman. I was going through a period of allergies. At one point in my life, I was going through severe allergies. I'm allergic to a lot of different foods, and certainly allergic to work. And I was going through these allergies. I went to the doctor, he tried this and this. I kept getting these, these allergic reactions. And we couldn't figure out what was I allergic to. So at one point, while the doctor was treating me, I said to him, half in jest, I said, what happens if a person becomes allergic to water? So he looked at me and just said, you know, listen, Kaplan, he's in trouble, okay? It wasn't gory as the question. A couple years later, I read about a woman in England gave birth, and because she gave birth, her body went haywire. And she developed an allergy to water. One of like 17 cases on record of somebody who's allergic to water. And she was living in England, which is a bad place to be allergic to water. And she couldn't touch her baby because the body sweat from the baby was not good for what caused her to break out. She couldn't take a shower, she couldn't drink, she couldn't do anything. And the only thing she could do once a week, she could take a quick shower, she could rinse off once a week. And the only thing she could drink, don't ask me any questions, I'm going to tell you what the report said. The only thing she could drink was Diet RC. I have no idea why. Possibly, possibly means that it is freshly squeezed chemical juice. Pure chemical juice has nothing to do with liquid. I have no idea. So the only thing she could drink was Diet RC. So just think about that the next time you have any soft drink. It's something that you keep in mind. So this woman was there, and the woman said when they interviewed her, she said, "My life is no life. I have no life over here." She said, "What kind of life is this? I can't even walk out the house. I can't touch my baby. I can't drink. I can't." And my mother, "Chaya, chaya, einam chaya." So we say everybody knows that Torah is water. Water is Torah. Ein ma'im ela Torah. Water is Torah. So a person understands that if a person lives allergic to Torah, there's certain people who will do anything other than learn. No matter what you give, they give any opportunity in the world. Something a man goes, gets to the base medrash early before, 10 minutes before mincha. It sits. He just sits there. Just sits like a bump on the log. Open a sefer, open a mishnah, or open a mishnah. I say, okay, what you open? Anything you reads right to left. Nowadays, you can open things that read left to right. It doesn't matter. A person who lives allergic to Torah, a person lives devoid of Torah, totally devoid of Torah, chayav einam chayim, he's got no life. How could a person live? How could a person live without Torah? So, obviously, if a person wants a Torah Jew, understands that if there's an area of life, an area of life that we need chizuk, so the chizuk is always going to be in Talmud Torah. The Gemara says in Brachas that there are four things that need chizuk constantly, and the first thing on the list is Talmud Torah. Gemara Brachas also says in Nafdin Dalet, it says like this. It says there was a man had a dream, and in the dream, Nafdin Vavam Beis, he had a dream, and in his dream he said, Chazai bechelmoy, chazai debalati lekochva. I had a dream that I swallowed a star. Can you give me a cup of water? Oh boy, yeah. Subliminal suggestion. Not RC, not Diet RC. The guy said he had a dream. Chazai devaloi lekochva. I had a dream that I swallowed a star. Omar Le, one of the Rabbi Shmuel, said to him, Bar Yisrael Zavante, you kidnapped a Jew, v'chalta ledame. You kidnapped and sold a Jew, and v'chalta ledame, you killed him. So the four ships say over here, who did he say that he kidnapped? Who did he say? A Jew. He didn't say he kidnapped one of the Gedolei Ador. He didn't say he kidnapped the Talmud Chacham. He says he kidnapped a Jew. That means that your ordinary Jew is compared to a star. Your ordinary Jew is a kochav. Now, there are several reasons why we're compared. Thank you very much. The decisions, you know, which one? Your ordinary Jew is compared to a star. Your ordinary Jew is compared to a kochav. Why are we compared to kochavim? Bracha to Avram Avinu, your offspring of the kochavim. First of all, we understand that a star, a kochav, when you look at a star, you look at it, it looks like a little dot in the sky. The closer you get to the star, the bigger the star starts to become. The closer you get, the bigger it becomes. So everybody knows by a Jew, you hear about a person, you don't know much about him. Then, the closer you get, the more you understand about this person. With nobody should have to go. A person goes to a levaya. Often you hear certain things about a person who's nifter. He looked like what we call an ordinary Jew. There's no such thing as an ordinary Jew. You hear about that, he used to learn daf yomi. He never missed a daf yomi in 47 years. And he gives a lot of tzedakah. And he's a baal chesed. You hear things I never knew that about him. And the more you find out about him, you see this man is he was huge. He was a giant. That's what your ordinary Jew is compared to a kohav. The closer you get to him, by the goyim, it's the opposite. By the goyim, it says, the Medrash says, Paro was one amma tall. There's a Medrash, Chazal says, the Gemara says, Paro was one amma tall. And there's a Medrash that says, Nebuchadnezzar, King Nebuchadnezzar, was katan kikad. He was the size of a jug. Right? Now, a jug is small. You know, a kad is one amma, and he's a jug. When they went one-on-one, the two of them, you stop and think, these are the two most powerful men in the history of the world. And they're both described as being able to walk under a table without bending their knees. These are the emperors of the ancient world. So on the resume, you had to put down, yes, I could bite people in the shins without bending. And I'm not sure what it was. Not sure what it was. Then you became an emperor. You became an emperor because you were an amatol. So the pshat is that you could be a Nebuchadnezzar, you could be a Paro, and you're a very small person. And the closer anybody gets to you, the more they see what a baby you are, what an immature, you're an infant. You could conquer the world, but as an individual, you haven't worked on yourself, developed your meatus, you haven't done anything of significance, and you're a person who's insignificant. You're a very, very small person. Sometimes you have, people go to a picnic. Excuse me one second. I'm sure I'm going to be right. Family goes out to a picnic. So you have every kosher animal known to man makes a supreme sacrifice to be at that picnic on the grill. and you have cake, and you have drinks, and you have snash, and you have everything. But one person forgot to bring the mustard, right? All day, there's one man who's always got, nobody brought the mustard? I can't believe nobody brought, the mustard. He's got Kesuda Shlomo Bishoso, and nobody brought the mustard. And then in the car, and everybody's talking on the way home how much they enjoyed it. Yeah, well, it would have been better with the mustard. You never forget, that's so Yomov, that's a little person. That's such a small, infantile person. A Torah Jew is a kochav compared to the star, number one. Number two, where did the stars come from? The stars come from the inception of the stars because you had the Shnei Maoros HaGadolim. And so the moon, what was originally one of the Maoros HaGadolim, the moon comes to Ribbono Shel Olam and says, listen, the Shnei Malachim Mikesser Echad, you can't have two kings with one crown. And he's like, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you're right. L'chi umati asatzmech. Go, hamiti asatzmech. Go, reduce yourself. And that wasn't what he was expecting to hear, obviously. That was like one of those, you come up and say, I didn't mean that, sorry. And you are reduced. In order to minimize the pain of the moon is reduced. In order to minimize the pain of the moon, what did HaKadosh Baruch Hu do? HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the kochavim. The stars, the inception of the stars was at the point that the moon's pain had to be reduced. That's what the Medrash says. That means that the job of a Jew, the job of a Torah Jew, is to do everything in their power in order to reduce the pain of another Jew. That's our job. Our job is to not cause anybody pain, that for sure. And if a person is in pain, our job is to be kochavim, to help a person reduce their pain. That's where the kochavim come from. So a person understands that we're compared, he kidnaps a Jew, and he calls a Jew a kochav. That means every single Jew has a tremendous potential. Every single Jew has a koch and has a potential. We have a potential, A, that we could grow. We have a potential, certainly, that our tafkid is to make sure the Chas Hashem, we don't cause anybody else pain. I was once in Gateshead, and the Gateshead Rav, he's American, by the way. Gateshead Rav, those of you from England, probably wish you're American. And the Gateshead Rav, if you're not, you should be. So the Gateshead Rav is American, so he told me that he was once, he's sitting at home, and he gets a phone call. A guy from Scotland calls him up. Says, hello, is this the chief rabbi of the Jews? He goes, well, I'm the chief rabbi of the Gateshead community. He says, I have a confession to make. He says, well, we don't do that sort of thing. Maybe you want to go to a Catholic priest. He says, no, this is regarding the Jews. So he says, okay, come and see me. The guy walks in, and he says, look, last month I was in Europe, and I went to one of the concentration camps, and I walked into one of the crematoriums, and I pulled a stone out of the wall. And Libby Nokfi, now I feel guilty about it, so here's the stone. He puts it on his table and he walks out. The guy walks out back to Scotland. So the Gateshead Rav, he's looking at the stone. What do you do with it? So first he looked at the stone to determine that there's no human residue, otherwise you have to bury it. Made sure the stone, there's no human residue. He didn't know what do you do with the stone. So he called Reb David Soloveitchik, his Rebbe Reb David Soloveitchik. He says, the guy gave me a stone. What do I do with the stone? So he said, Reb David thought for 10 minutes. After 10 minutes, he said to him, there's a pasuk that says, Evan Mikir Tizok, the stone cries from the wall. He said, that stone was there witnessing what it witnessed in the crematoria. That was its tachlis in the Bria. He says, the stone was fulfilling its tachlis in the Bria. The next time you're there, you should put the stone, try to find a place, replace the stone, put it in the wall, and the kachavit. The next time he went, a couple of months later, he went to the camp, found the crematoria, and he replaced the stone in the wall. Evan Mikir Tizuk, the stone is fulfilling its potential. That means every single Jew has a potential. Every single Jew has a tafkid. Every single Jew has a role to play in life. And the ultimate role, the greatest role for a Torah Jew, somebody's got the potential, the role is that a person has to be, doesn't matter what a person is doing in life, a person has got to fulfill their potential in Torah. Talmud Torah, Keneged Kulam, that's the single most important mitzvah. So there's a medrash, very strange medrash. There's a medrash that says, there was a man who was on his way to Eretz Yisrael. And on the way to Eretz Yisrael, I saw two birds fighting. And one of the birds killed the other bird. So the living bird then went over, flew over, ripped up a blade of grass, touched the dead bird with the grass, and the grass came back to life. Grass that brings life. What's that?
The bird came back to life.
The bird came back to life. Yeah? The dead bird came back, touched it with the grass, the dead bird came back to life. So the guy thought, this is great. I have the potential here. I have grass that's mechayim mesim. This is really expensive grass, right? I have grass that's mechayim mesim. This is legalized grass. I have grass that's mechayim mesim with tremendous potential here. So he goes and he says, you know what, this is great. I'm going to go to Eretz Yisrael. I'm going to be Mechai the Mason. So he takes a pie, he takes the grass, and on his way, he sees a fox, a dead fox at the side of the road. He said, let's give it a run through just to see that it's working the way I want it to be working. So he takes the grass, touches the fox comes to life. He says, this is unbelievable. He's on his way, keeps progressing, getting closer to Eretz Yisrael, sees a dead lion on the side of the road. He goes over to the lion, says, let's just make sure, right? So he goes over, he's got nothing better to do, so he brings the dead lion back to life. I guess the lion worked up an appetite while he was dead. Takes a lot of energy to be dead. And the lion came back to life, and the lion obviously ate him, and that was the end of his potential for Tchias HaMesim in Eretz Yisrael. So I wonder, that's what the Medrash says. I could make it, it sounds like what, Lahavdil Elif Alfei Havdol, something like Aesop's Fables, you know, one of those frightening children's stories that they tell in England also as bedtime stories, which always ends with the child getting eaten. I don't know if you've ever seen the old Grimm's fairy tales. You know, the child always gets eaten, it gives children nightmares. I said, what a Chazal are telling us a story about a lion. So I think the pshat is, a person could be holding the key to life in his hand. A person's got the potential for life in his hand. And on a narishkeit, on a stupidity, a person could take what he's holding and a person could throw the entire thing away. A person could take, he's got everything in his hand. You've got life itself in your hand and a person throws it away. So Chazal say, a person has the opportunity to sit and learn. And in our day and age, there's so many forms of narishkeit that are available, all in the convenience, it used to be in the convenience of your home. Now it's in the convenience of your palm, or on the convenience of your wrist. Right? That's where all the narishkeit in the world is. And a person could literally throw his own life away, possibly the life of future Doros and his family, all on a narishkeit. A person's got the ability to be a kochav. He's got a limitless potential for every Jew. That's the tafkid of a Torah Jew. So a person understands. Also, you know, there's a family living in a goy town, some small goy town. The father had to be there for a couple of years on business. There are not only no other Jews in town, there are no other frum Jews. So the father's there, the family's there, and you have little Avi and Yitzi and Yankee, and the only kids for them to play with are Johnny, Billy, and Timmy next door, the goyim next door. 25th of December comes around, and Mr. Murphy starts dragging in a tree. He says, Billy, Johnny, Timmy, help me with the tree. So the little frum kid said, Mr. Murphy, could we help you also? He says, yeah, come on, guys. So they start schlepping in this tree. And Avi says, well, Mr. Murphy, you know, how tall does the tree have to be? He says, oh, it doesn't really matter. It could be big tree, little tree, doesn't really matter. The height doesn't matter. And Yitzi says, well, Mr. Murphy, you know, how close to the window does it have to be? He says, Tim, you know, you can put it in the middle of the room if you want. It doesn't really matter. As long as there's a little bit of, alcoholic beverages underneath, nothing matters. You know, it's fine. And then Yankee says, well, Mr. Murphy, you know, what if some of the leaves start turning brown? Is the tree possible? You know, what are you guys asking so many questions for? You know, what's it, just a lousy tree? So you stop and think in the Torah home, what's going on? What's going on in the Torah for the youngest age, the little kid? First he's saying, Shema Yisrael. Okay, they don't cover their eyes because they're scared. You know, Shema Yisrael. You know, 1.5 years old, he's saying Shema. And they're doing a Havdalah candles and Kiddush. My kids used to play Shul. Shabbos morning, play Shul. They take a big beach towel. You know, he's the chazan, you know, and he's the gabbai, and he's the guy who yells at the gabbai. And then it always ends with an ufruf. That's how, you know, somehow. So they learn Shul. That's what goes on in the Torah home. That's what goes on. You don't appreciate yourself. What you're from the earliest age, that's what we're doing in a Torah home. I heard about the frum kids are playing Monopoly. Kid lands on a hotel, boom, bankrupt, you're out of the game. So he says, let's make him a gemach, right? I mean, make the kid a gemach. You know, I read the rules of Monopoly. The name of the game is not to help people stay in. The name of the game is to get them out. So you understand, in a Torah home, this is what kids are seeing. This is what kids are, these are the schusim that Jews have. This is everywhere we go, there's another mitzvah lurking, no matter where a Jew goes. You go traveling. What does a goy pick when he travels? What's a guy? Takes a fishing pole, takes a credit card, he's ready to go. You know, there he goes. What does a Jew take first? My talis and my tefillin. Okay, my talis, I got to have a sitter with him. Beside my sitter, got a little alert, I got a gemara. Can't even get on the plane. You're overweight before you even put your clothing in the suitcase. Yeah. You can't move. Yeah. And a couple of cans of tuna fish, just in case there's nothing to eat. You understand? So what a Torah Jew is doing, everywhere we go, left, right, and center, there's chusim, left, right, and center. Think about what you're doing in the course of the day. So obviously the biggest list that a person has is obviously Talmud Torah. I just want to share with you a couple of incidents, just to give you adhechan hasula magaz for people who are really involved in Torah, what people are looking for. Rav Eliashiv Zatzal, as Yadua, when Rav Eliashiv got married, so the day after his chasna, Rav Eliashiv was learning in the house. And his wife said, the Rebbetzin said to Rav Eliashiv, why are you in the house? He says, Shana Rishona, V'simach Es Ishto. So the Rebbetzin said to him, if you want to make me happy, you go to the Beis Medrash. And Rav Eliashiv had that little hovel somewhere in some hidden hovel in Meisharim. They sat there for about 90 years and he learned it. And his wife pointed off, he went to the Beis Medrash. Over 60 years later, the Rebbetzin was on her deathbed. So go says this mamish. Rav Eliashiv was in the room. And she sensed that as the whole family was there, she sensed that Rav Eliashiv was there. With her last ounce of strength, she picked up her hand. This is documented. She picked up her hand, finger, she did like this. Right? That's where you're supposed to be. He went to the Beis Medrash. They came to the Beis Medrash, let him know when the Rebbetzin was nifter. That was that, you know, okay, there was only one Rav Eliashiv, there was only one Rebbetzin Eliashiv. Nobody expects your wives to do that to you, nobody expects you to leave, because you won't, right? But everybody understands. Everybody understands that there's only one Rav Eliashiv. But a person understands that there are different types. Rav Yisachar Meir Zatzal is Rosh Yeshiva Nitivot of Yeshivat HaNegev. Rav Yisachar Meir, now pay attention to this carefully, keep a husband over here. Rav Yisachar Meir used to shower and change into his Shabbos clothes on Thursday afternoon. He would come to the Beis Medrash Thursday afternoon, learn night Seder. Then he would make a Mishmar Thursday night. Mishmar in those days wasn't like now. Nowadays, Mishmar is 45 minutes of learning and then chonch. Right, that's Mishmar and then town. That wasn't Rav Eliashiv's Mishmar. Rav Eliashiv, Mishmar meant you learned through the night. Thursday night, you learned through the night. He got up Shabbos morning and after learning, nowadays we make a Mishmar. I stay up through the night, all night Shavuos night. We stay up and sometimes we even learn a little too. You know, and all night Shavuos night. Every Thursday night you stayed up, Rav Yisachar Meir stayed up Thursday night, Friday morning, davened, learned all day Friday. He learned all day Friday, which is mutter, by the way. He learned Friday. No iser about Tosif. Friday night he ate the meal, and after the meal, he then learned a night Seder on El Shabbos. Believe it or not, that's also mutter with no beer. He learned a night Seder, and after the night Seder, he finally went to sleep for 6 hours till the next morning. So he's up 36 hours on, and then 6 hours off, and he learned. That's the type of level. That's what we're talking about, dedication to the Torah. Obviously, we're not expecting that from ourselves. But when we understand that if they could do that, we could push a little bit more. There's not one of us that can't push a little bit more. There was a Jew in the Soviet Union. I'm gonna, again, I don't expect anybody to do this. If you do, please let me know, because then we have to talk. But there was a Jew in before communism ended in Russia. Right under the noses of the communists, there were Jews who they created a pyramid system, a Baal Tshuva pyramid system. Anybody who learned Torah. If you learned Torah, you went to Russia, you taught Torah. The Rabbanim that went incognito, they went to Russia, they taught Torah. He taught to one person, one Russian, he taught it to two taught it to four. Right under the noses of the communists, they created a pyramid system where they became Baalei Tshuvas through Talmud Torah. So one of the Rebbeim was there, and when he got there, Russian Baal Tshuva, 17-year-old Bocher, comes over and he says, I have a shayla, halachic shayla. What's your shayla? He says, when I learn... So after 6 hours of learning, my mind starts to wander. I have this problem all the time, right? After 6 hours of learning straight, 6 hours without moving, my mind starts to wander. So he says, what's your shayla? He says, look, I know how to stand on my head. So what I do is, I'm a gymnast, I stand on my head for 10 minutes, and the blood goes to my head, it clears my head out, then I'm able to get myself upright and learn for another 3 or 4 hours. Says, what's your shayla? My shayla is, while I'm standing on my head, can I recite Mishnayos Baal Peh? And I have to ask the Rosh Yeshiva how often he gets that shayla here in the yeshiva. In our day and age, we put other people on their head, right? We don't put ourselves on their head. So I pray, so we don't know to stand on our head. We don't learn 6 hours straight, and we don't know Mishnayos. Okay, so it's a problem. We're 3 steps removed. On the other hand, you understand, a person who cares, this is his shayla. That's their concept. That's how Ahechanasa. So at one level, we're allowed to at least try. Now, I want to ask you a question. Imagine, and obviously these are signs of misspent youth, because I got the idea from a television game show, as intelligent as that was. And imagine, I tell you the following. Tomorrow morning at 7:30 in the morning, 7:30 in that room, there's going to be a money machine sitting in that room. From 7:30 in the morning till 7:30, you have 24 hours to sit by the money machine. There are going to be $5 bills in the money machine, and you could pull out. And as many as you pull out, you get to keep. From 7:30, 24 hours. Okay? You're getting excited. It's not even true, right? And we're already just the very thought, right? Okay? You got 24 hours to pull money out of a machine. First of all, what time do you think you're going to be by that room? Right? What time do you think you ever? Well, you know, I'll get up probably about 7:15, hit my snooze alarm, you know, and I get 7:28, I'll first start get my halchanas. I don't think so. I think you probably might not be able to sleep all night. And if you do fall asleep, you have six alarms next to you. And if the alarms don't go off, you're not going to say, well, I wasn't a minion, my alarm never went off, the vecker never came. You'll figure out a way to be up. That I guarantee you. At 7 o'clock, you'll be waiting eagerly by the door. Then you go into the room and now you can pull $5. What are you going to look like when you pull, you know? Pulling $5, yeah, you get there, pulling $5, pull. Then, you know, after about an hour of doing it, your arms are getting tired, you know. So one keeps going, you rest the other one, and the next thing you know, you get a little energy, you start pull. Then it's time to eat. About after 2 hours, you're going to be hungry. What do you think breakfast is going to look like? What are they having? Eggs? Let's go across the street. Let's go over here. Breakfast, you're going to be sitting there like this. Somebody bring me food. Right. What is it? What would you like? Doesn't matter. Right? You want some pizza? Anything. Cardboard, that's fine. Right? Put it in my mouth. That's what it's going to look like. Why? Because you understand that. You understand that what's at stake over here. And then your cell phone rings. Right? Think you're going to answer it? Maybe it's important. Maybe it's your friend from the other yeshiva. It could be important. Yeah? No, cell phone's going to ring. Forget about the cell phone. Nothing's going to interrupt. And then what's going to happen? Eventually, you're going to get tired. What do you think sleep's going to look like? So I know what sleep looks like. For us, sleep is an activity that we perfect, practice, and we're good at, right? And sleep is an elaborate activity, you know, about a shower, and we have to chill for a little bit. You know, the whole, don't get rigmarole, and then get into bed and touch every corner of the mattress. You know, it's got to be, you know, the mattress got to be this thick. That's not what sleep's like. Sleep's going to look like the stipler sleep. The stipler didn't go to sleep. The stipler fell asleep, literally. That means you're going to be like this. That's what sleep's going to look like, because you understand what's at stake over here, and you're going to push yourself like you never put yourself before in your life. When we hear about Gedolei Yisrael, the stipler, when he wanted to get a bracha, you couldn't get into the stipler between 10 and 12 in the morning. You know why? That's when he slept, because he learned all night, every night. He just learned, and he collapsed at about 10 o'clock in the morning, till about 12, and then he back to the routine. And a person understands every minute of life is a $5 bill. Every minute of life could be used to pull money out of a machine. Except we're talking about eternal currency. We're not talking about something that could go as easily as it could come. I once heard a medrash, terrible medrash. You'll love it. Medrash says, a man could spend, I mean, this will put life in the proper, if this doesn't put life in the proper perspective, nothing will. A man could spend his entire life working and earning money, and then he dies and leaves it for... So people say, well, he leaves it for his kids. No, that's not so bad. People do that all the time. He could die and leave all his money for his wife's next husband. Think about that. Think about that. You have the ketchup king of America, Mr. Heinz. All of us schnabel, so Mr. Heinz's wife. Mr. Heinz's wife then married the what he called the Secretary of State of the United States, right? If Mr. Heinz would have known his wife married what's his name, Jack Kerry from the United States, and his money is paying for his hairdo over there, and what he called, he would have eaten mustard his whole life. Mr. Heinz would have gone there. Can you imagine the Tsar? So a person can waste his life accumulating money, and then he leaves it. Who knows what happens to the money? Could lose the money. Here we're talking about eternal currency, number one. Now, even more important. There's the Medrash Chazal say that Og Melech HaBoshon picked up a mountain. Good morning, brachas also. Og Melech HaBoshon picked up a mountain throughout Klal Yisrael. How tall was Og Melech? But make a cheshbon. Moshe Rabbeinu was 10 amas tall. He took a hatchet 10 amas tall, jumped 10 amas, and he hit Og in the ankle. Right? That's what it says. I once carried out the cheshbon based on human proportions. How tall was Og Melech? I think I came with 4/5 of a mile tall. Which creates all sorts of logistic problems. Where do you get his suits and things like that? Okay, but he's 4/5 of a mile tall, okay? Now, if you take a guy who's 4/5 of a mile tall and you hit him in the ankle with a spear or a hatchet, whatever it was, what do you think that could possibly do to him? I mean, what you hit him in the ankle with a hatchet is like taking somebody and poking him in the ankle with a paper clip, with a pin. Somebody like us, you poke him in the ankle with a needle. That's what it is. You're not going to kill the man. Elamai, Og obviously represents the counterforce to Klal Yisrael. Moshe Rabbeinu is showing, make the effort, and then you're going to get the Seata Dishmaya. All you need is peacefully Pesach Shomachet, just a little opening that a person makes, and then HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives the Seata Dishmaya. So the battle that we're fighting, where the Yetzer Hara is even bigger, person makes the effort, makes one little poke, one little attempt, one little breakthrough, and then you get just receives the Seata, but there's got to be an attempt on our side, there's got to be something to attempt. Now, I want to put something in proper perspective. Chazal say Yaakov Avinu, 14 years, he left home. 14 years is the Beis Medrash Shem Ve'Ever. And he learned Torah. Why 14 years? Pashtus, I don't know, I didn't see the Mefarshim. Pashtus says, Ayadayim Yedei Esav. He needs protection from Yedei Esav. Mainly he goes, he learns 14 years as Yad. Yad, the Yad of Torah, will be his protection. Mita Kenegad Mita, he'll protect him against Yedei Esav. You understand that Torah is the protection of Pasha. So Yaakov Avinu goes, 14 years in Beis Medrash Shem Ve'Ever, and he says he didn't sleep. Chazal say he didn't sleep. The Medrash says, you know, he collapsed, took a shtender nap. Right? He took a shtender nap. He didn't sleep. He didn't sleep what he called. Mayas, nowadays sleep. You know, we sleep at night. Comfortable Shabbos afternoon. An 8-hour nap, guys take. You know, whatever we call it, a coma. Guys take a nap Shabbos afternoon. Yaakov Avinu, 14 years he didn't sleep. What happens? He's running away from Esav. Running away from Esav. He stops at Har Moriah. And over there he lies down, takes a nice comfortable stone. Chazal, the Mefarshim say, the stone became soft for him. Sat down, he lied down and he went to sleep. Sleep, Rabbo say, you know where sleep comes from? You sleep when you're lacking stimulation. When you're bored, you sleep. That's when people sleep. There was a president of the United States who once said, who slept, as you do, he slept 4 hours a night. So he said, why only four? He said, when I'm sleeping, I'm not the president. And apparently it's good to be the president. And so for 4 hours, he slept 4 hours, and he wasn't tired. If you've ever been involved in any activity that really gets you pumped up, if you're watching something on TV, something exciting, something important, the Super Bowl, and you're watching, nobody's tired. You're only tired when you come to Seder in the morning at 9 o'clock after 8 hours sleep and a good hearty breakfast, and you open up your Gemara, and the first thing you happen, you open it, you go, let's see, wow. Oh, where are we? No, we didn't. Oh, wrong Masechta. And that's usually what happens, right? Spend 20 minutes deciding that you realize that you're not even in the right place. And you're yawning. Why are you yawning? Because of the lack of stimulation. Children never want to go to sleep. So you do it. Kids always feel they're missing out. Why? Because for kids, everything is new. The kids still have that stimulation, that excitement. Adults, ask any adult after the age of about 18, 19. Hi, how you doing? So tired. Everybody's always tired. So tired. What are you tired? You just woke up. We had a guy working in the yeshiva also, you know, a descendant of Cham, working in the yeshiva, you know, in Kayadua, you know, they know all the halachas, they know everything else. You say to the guy, 11 o'clock in the morning, hi, how are you doing? Oh, it's rough, it's rough. What's rough at 11 o'clock in the morning? Where would you like to be? Well, okay, you got a hangover, that's a problem. You know, but what happened? For an adult, we lack the stimulation. Now, think about this. Yaakov Avinu, 14 years, he didn't sleep. Why didn't he sleep? He's so pumped up from the excitement of Torah, he doesn't sleep. When does he get a little bored? A little bit of boredom? When you're running away from Esav, and you're running for your life, that's kind of boring. That means that running for his life wasn't as stimulating as the Torah that Yaakov Avinu was learning. Can you imagine such a thing? Didn't ever happen to you? You know, a person, they used to have something called Magic Eye. Magic Eye was this book that you look at, and if you can get, you open up the book, and you get it at a three-dimensional angle. You get this flat picture, and at a certain point, you could actually get an image. It's a three-dimensional image. You ever seen these things? It's called Magic Eye. Watch people, every person, always the same reaction. I don't see anything. That's amazing. always, every single person. Every single person, except there's always one guy in the room. There's one guy in the room who can't get it. There's nothing worse than that. That's Gehenna. Right? Yeah. I think I see it. No, you don't see it. You didn't see it. You'd know if you saw it. Does ever happen to you? You're learning. You learn the Gemara. You learn the Rashi. You think you know what it's all about. Yeah, I even did Chazara. I learned it twice, right? So I know what it's all about. And then you learn the Tosos. And as you learn the Tosos, they think, oh, I didn't. Okay, then you take a look at the Marsha. And you're, all right. Oh, all of a sudden, everything goes another level deeper. There's endless amazement. There's endless stimulation and learning. And it's not physical. So it's absolutely endless. In the physical realm, if a person indulges, a person hits a point where it becomes almost muse. Person goes to one of these $20 all-you-can-eat, right? These restaurants, where they always take off the sale when the Yeshiva Bachrim are home for Bein HaZmanim, because they know they haven't got a chance. You go, $20 all-you-can-eat, and a guy staggers away from it. You can't look at food for a week, right? In Torah, it's never like that, because then when you finish the Marsha, then you open up a Pnei Yeshua. Then you're again like, oh, okay, I don't think I understand. I mean, I saw it. And again, and all of a sudden opens up. Completely new avenues of thought and depth that the Torah has. That's the stimulation of the Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov is running away. That's the stimulation. I remember they used to have, I don't know, I'm dating myself now, but I remember my kids were, when they were growing up, they had this little thing called Game Boy. I don't know if you guys had it, you're already past that. So I remember on the Game Boy, they had this guy, this little Italian kid, Mario. Right? And I never liked these things. I got dizzy from them. And one day I'm goofing around with this Game Boy thing, and I look at this little Italian, a little ace of, and I'm running this Mario through, and all of a sudden he goes through a door. And it goes, blah, 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 something like that. Next thing you know, a new screen opens up. So I got nervous. I got panicky. I thought I won. I thought they were going to contact the White House. I had no idea what happened to them. So I called my kid. He's 9 years old. I said, what just happened? He says, well, you just finished that stage. You just finished the first stage. I said, what happens next? It's a new stage. I said, how many stages are there? He said, 15. A 15 stage? Are you kidding? Right? And then he looked at me and he said, Daddy, is that the first time you finished the first stage? That was the last time I touched it. You know, there's just so much a man could take. You know, so he comes in. I think about it, what was it called? It was called Mario Worlds. It was called Olamos. That was the name of the game. You finish one thing, you get the next thing. Something new opens up. That's the stimulation. That's the excitement of Talmud Torah. That's what the Rav Shteyman Shlita was once on a plane. He was flying, I think, from Baltimore to Toronto. I guess anybody goes to Baltimore and leaves as fast as possible. I'm not sure. He was flying from Baltimore to Toronto, and on the way, they passed over, what do you call it, Niagara Falls. And so everybody on the plane is looking out the window. Shteyman is sitting there learning for Shteytzef, and somebody said to him, Rebbe, you have to look, this. You have to look, you have to see this. This is Mamish Niflo Sabore. So Shteyman says, no. This right here is Niflo Sabore. Right? This is Niflo Sabore. Niagara Falls. Go look at a picture. Okay, go look at it. What do you call it? You could Google Niagara Falls, right? Do whatever it is they do to it, right? Yeah, do whatever you want. This you can't Google, right? This you have to learn. This is the flow subway. This is the real thing. This is where we're supposed to be, and this is where our potential is. This is where our kochav, somebody who's a star, somebody who's got their potential. And there's nothing more tragic than a person who has the potential, he's got life in his hands, in the same way that fool brought a lion to life. And the lion then prevents him from realizing his potential, what he could do with it, the same way that a person could throw away the life potential. They had there's a Gemara in Shabbos. The Gemara says that Rav said, when you say a hesped for me, say the hesped, and I'll be omed there. So the Gemara says. What's he's an omed? Rav is in the Olam HaEmes, and he's an omed. An omed means that there's no more movement. Once you get to the Olam HaEmes, there's no more movement. On the other hand, the Gemara in Bracha says, Talmidei Chachamim ein lahem menucha. Talmidei Chachamim have no rest. Not in Olam HaZeh, and not in Olam HaBa. Right? That's a little bit disappointing, right? Because Talmidei Chachamim have no rest in Olam HaBa. Because, you know, we always think of Olam Haba as, you know, that's finally when you get to stretch out, nobody's going to bother you. Olam Haba. Well, that's how we're picturing it. Talmidei Chachamim have no rest in Olam Haba. What does that mean, they have no rest in Olam Haba? The pshat is, the Stipler said once at a siyum. He said, whatever you've learned in this world, whatever a person learns in this world, they're going to get a Havana in the Olam HaEmes. And in the Olam HaEmes, there's no end. There's no rest in the Olam HaEmes. That means it's like being at an amusement park. You go to an amusement park and you finish one ride. Oh, that was a great ride. Then they give you the better ride. And you go on the better. Then eventually you get to the supersonic dinner spinner, you know, which you've been waiting for years to get on that ride. And, you know, you get in one ride and you never get tired of it. Because there's each ride is a further upgrade for the person. Person goes to the Olam HaEmes and he takes his Torah to the Olam HaEmes. Talmidei Chachamim, ein lahem menucha, lo ba'olam hazeh, lo ba'olam haba. The Torah that they've learned, they take with them to Olam HaBa. Finally, there's a documented incident that took place with the Maharshal. Maharshal was the Rav of Lublin. It's brought down in the city, in the records of the city of Lublin. I heard this originally from Yitzhak Gradowitz at Or Samech, and then I heard it later from somebody else. It's documented incident with the Maharshal. There was a couple that was married, and the wife was sick. She was dying. And she made her husband take a shvua that he's not going to marry anybody else. He won't remarry. That's something that's very common. Somebody dies to make a shvua. She was nifter, and a year later, somebody offered him a shidduch. He went to the Marshal, and the Marshal was matir him. The Marshal said that you're allowed to, the shvua is anchal, whatever it was, you can marry somebody else. So the man marries another woman, and shortly after the marriage, the man became sick, and within a few weeks, the man died. So the woman came to the Marshal, the second wife, she came to the Marshal, she said, it's your fault. It's your fault. You matered him to remarry, and he had made a shvua. I mean, mele, he got punished, and now I'm an amana. I got married to the guy, but I'm off for a couple weeks. Now I'm an amana. It's your fault. So the Marshal wrote a tshuva. I'm just telling you what's documented. The Marshal wrote a tshuva. He relearned the sugya, wrote a tshuva, why it's mutter. He went to the cemetery, opened up the kever, threw the tshuva, he put the tshuva into the kever, and the man came out of the kever, Zatchias HaMesim. So it's documented in the records of the city of Lublin. It was Zatchias HaMesim. The man comes out of the kever. So after he came out of the kever, the couple resumed their marriage. So a few days later, the wife comes over, she says, I don't know, I don't love him like I used to. Something changed, right? Something changed. You know, maybe he died and he changes, you know, something happened. So it says, in the record says that the city of the people of Lublin, then the Marshal davened that she should have a change of heart, and she had a change of heart, and the couple lived happily ever after. The Zikne Lublin said, Godol ha-nesa acharon min arishon. Tchias ha-mesim. Oh, it happens. Oh, but to change a heart, oh, that's already a big nace. To change a heart is the biggest nace. That's what we're looking for. We're looking for in our door where so many things are tugging at our heart in the other direction. That's what we want. That's the biggest nace of our door. People like yourselves sitting in a basement, your heart's in the right place. Because Baruch Hashem, we should have the siyata d'shmaya that we should constantly be involved in learning Torah, tovli Torah, Torah speed, tovli Torah speed.